John, I just got to tell you this. I love podcasting, but my dog's got to poop.
Go.
I love it, but my dog's got to poop, and that's important.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith podcast for September 2024. I am your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by Tim Walls. Just kidding, it's Tim Nelson.
I know. I get a lot of comparisons to Tim Walls. His humor is similar to mine. It's dad humor.
You totally have Tim Walls energy, Tim. I don't know what it is. It's just like, actually, it's a super compliment because you're like, have joy just kind of radiating through you. You have those that you like look like a dad and you feel like a dad, and like, that's beautiful. I think it's great.
So I get that all the time at work from my younger coworkers. They say I've got that Tim Walls dad energy. Like I could make a casserole and call super conservative people weirdos. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's great. And you're wild. Like, he just looks like a guy that's always out there, you know, doing the hunting and the fishing. And I know Slobby Bobbin has been making a lot of endeavors recently.
That's my fly fishing Instagram persona.
It was referenced at one point, but you'd have to be a real loyal listener. But yes, that's your fly fishing persona. You have been taking over my feed. It seems like the fishing's going well. Have you been having fun out there?
It's fun. It's getting cooled off, so we're beginning to catch some more fish, which is good. It gets real hot, and you'd think that would be good for fishing, but real hot is lower oxygen content.
Really?
See, so how is this it, doesn't spring belong and... on this podcast?
I love it. No, this is fascinating to me. So it's spring and fall are actually the peak fishing seasons. Is that correct?
I think so. I think early summer's good too.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it gets too cold and they all hit the bottom of the lake and they get kind of hibernation style. Mm-hmm. But right now it's beginning to pick up.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you've been getting out there. It's always fun seeing you in your element, the big fish and a smile on your face.
I do like it. It's fun.
So yeah, how else you been holding up? Everything okay, Tim? The fam, school, good?
I don't go to school, John.
No, I know.
Oh, you're
I
talking about the kids.
I was talking about the kids.
Yes. Yeah, we're doing a lot of high school football right now. So that's been interesting. My son is, I'm like very proud dad about this because he's so much better at sports than I was. And I really wanted to be good at sports, but I have short legs and a long torso and I look like a penguin. I'm all... They invented that sound for me to run.
It's so funny. I have sympathized because I wasn't even into sports at all. And my kid, my youngest is into it. And I'm on the same way. I'm on the sidelines. I'm like, I'm doing the sports thing. I like get to live vicariously. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be the sports dude, but I just never could do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of fun. I know Zion's like a baseball player, right?
Baseball and soccer. Loves it.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. You told me that and I forgot about that. Yeah, so it's been kind of cool. I'm going to brag on him a little bit. He's a sophomore, and he's starting varsity special teams.
Wow.
At a 6A school, which is pretty amazing. So he gets to play on Friday nights as a sophomore. And then there was kind of a blowout last week, and so he got to play like a whole quarter, maybe almost a half, just on defense. So I was just...
You should be proud. That's amazing. Friday Night Lights. How fun is that? Friday night football games. Like, I always loved it, even just as a just going when I went to high school. But like, that's really cool that you get to be there and he gets to do it.
It's cool for like people watching, fun. It's like the smells of the concessions. Sometimes like somebody in the neighborhood will have a campfire going and you can kind of smell the smoke in the cool fall air. I just like that kind of stuff. It's a great transition.
This is the time, man. I love fall so much. October is my favorite month. I think I say it on every September podcast. I just can't contain it. I'm looking forward to it so much. You like feel it. You feel it in the air right now. Things changing. It's so good. Just like football starts this week, actually, the week that we're recording. The Packers start on Friday. They play in Brazil, and the first football game is tonight. And so, like, yeah, football and leaves changing, baseball playoffs, and it's just, like, the most wonderful time of the year.
Playing football in Brazil, that's doesn't, you know, second letter isn't a U. It's so weird. I don't know what's going on, but okay.
I don't know why they're playing football in Brazil, and, like, both of the teams are so scared of Brazil because there is, like, a lot of crime there that they're just staying in the hotel, and, like, they order are like, do not go outside, and like, it's just, why are we doing this? I don't know. But
you're 6'8", 320 pounds, but don't go outside.
Don't go outside.
That's not good.
And anyway, well, Tim, here we are again. It's time for all of our listeners' favorite segment. What have we been watching? Have you been watching anything new lately?
I had an answer and now I'm blanking. I'm trying to think. This is not good. I don't ever blank on this question. Oh my goodness.
You usually don't have anything prepared because you're usually watching so much random
weird stuff. Well, I am watching random weird stuff again. I'm watching some murder porn show on, I think it's on Max. It's like about some killer family or something.
Nice.
But like, that's like, it's kind of gross. Like, that's the same thing as if I was watching like Sex in the City, the new one, which is the worst show on television. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So nothing. You haven't been watching anything? There's nothing.
Well,
you
I did watch Mr. Popper's Penguins finally.
Oh.
I got worn down to watch Mr. Popper.
Yeah, I thought you were like, that's the one I won't watch, the one Jim Carrey.
Right. Yeah. So then after like 3 months of asking, I was like, fine, we're watching the Penguins. All right. And then I watched his. All right.
All right.
Oh, I know what I did. Okay. So originally John wanted me to watch a Kevin Costner film.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Kevin Costner is making this epic. Do you know the background of this, John?
I'm fascinated by it. But no, you go for it. Tell the listeners what it's all about. It's fascinating to me.
So I watched, we were originally going to review a Kevin Costner film, which I'm glad we're not because I don't know what to tell you about that. And it was like part one of this thing came out. I think it's on, I don't know.
Prime, it's on Max. It just came out on Max. Yeah. And it's part one. And like, yeah, go ahead.
So I watched this whole film.
You did it. What was it like? I'm really actually curious about this because, yeah, tell me.
I didn't find it particularly engaging, which is weird. It felt long.
But that's the thing is that he's like, hey, I'm making an experience for you. This is literally just the introduction. I'm just going to introduce you to these characters and then you're going to see, I'm going to take you on this 4-movie journey or whatever. Like, but that's a bold move when your movie is basically just an introduction and doesn't actually have the normal, you know, conflict and plot points. I don't know.
Yeah. So basically it's like kind of like setting the table, but yeah. Nobody, we don't know what the meal is yet. It's his Western fictional multiverse or
yeah,
whatever, or like a universe.
$50 million of his own money into it. I mean, like, he's obsessed. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So there is already a miniseries that came out called Lonesome Dove. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of the book that it was really
yes,
good, actually.
It's based on books. It's based on books. So it's called Lonesome Dove, and it's incredible. It's from the, I think it's from the 80s. But what I would have preferred is remake Lonesome Dove, because I think that is what, that's a great, great series. It holds up now. And so I would have preferred that. But yeah, I don't know. Kevin Costner as a lead is tough guy lead. I don't know if it's
not working
really
anymore.
Plausible. I don't know if it's plausible, what if, man.
What if like the second movie and third movie are like really, really good? Then retroactively, do you think this movie could work? Like if he really does bring the goods?
Yeah, I think you could do it. I mean, if we're looking at this as like I watch 1/3 of a movie,
right,
and then the rest of the 2/3 that wrap everything up and it all works, yeah, sure. But I kind of like, if that's the case, I really wish they would just all come out at once.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's a gamble. And at first, like, it wasn't making money. I don't know if it started recouping, but like there was a huge like loss in the box office. And so they pulled the second one from the release schedule and then somehow they worked it out to get back in. But big gamble. We'll see what happens. But yeah.
I have a very important question for you.
Okay.
What have you been watching?
Oh, well, let's see. First of all, I've been watching a lot of baseball. I'm obsessed. The Brewers are doing so good, Tim. They're going to go to the playoffs and it's going to be a thing.
In the first round.
They're going to get beat in the first round. But we got a new coach. I don't know. I'm excited because like, you know, our old coach was very like weird in the playoffs and he'd always make bizarre decisions. And we've got this very like, very gruff, his name's Pat Murphy. And he's like just in the sidelines swearing all the time.
Pat Murphy.
Yeah. He's very like your typical, like I've been doing baseball for 50 effing years. And like, you know, normally how when you relieve a pitcher, the coach will go up to the pitcher and give him a pat on the back and we're all friends here, right? Even if he's just totally ruined the whole game. Pat Murphy will just go up and I saw it the other day, like the pitcher ruined the whole game. Pat Murphy just walked right past him. The dude had to like give him he turned around to give him the ball. He's like, what? Oh, like that's his style. I don't know if it's great or not.
He works,
but, like,
he works in guilt and shame. The
guilt
way
and shame.
Every An old school coach style, guilt,
old
shame,
school.
And physical punishment.
So anyway, I don't know if I fully am on board with that, but hey, maybe it'll make a difference in the playoffs. So I've been watching that. But speaking of sports, what I have been
watching.
Wait a
sec. You know what I have realized? recently, and this is just because this segment's important. We do a segment where we don't talk about film, and I realize that we haven't queued in any new listeners to that.
That's true. It's their only, so we're Cinema Faith, we only cover movies, but on this one particular podcast, in this particular section, we do open it up for some TV. It is true.
Because last podcast, I was thinking, man, what if somebody tuned in here and didn't know that?
Right.
They'd be like, oh, what are these guys talking about? I thought this was film. But I think we're in the right here. I don't think initially we were. I think we were wrong about this initially, but then as the line has blurred between film. Right.
And the main reason we don't like do an exhaustive coverage of TV is just it's so much. Like you know, it's like season one of something is like 10 to 12 hours of television. It's just so hard to cover. Whereas we want our website to like, I do a top 10 list all year, you know, and I want my website to be able to be like, I've seen all the major movies and I can definitively say these are my opinion of what the best ones are. Very difficult to do that with television, right? So that's why I kind of prefer just doing it here where we can just sort of off the cuff, you know, mention it because it is relevant. It the line is blurred, like you said, but to cover it exhaustively on the website would require actual like employees, and you know, we just can't do it.
Yeah, and you couldn't even like that's a lot of content, and I think you got to narrow your content down. So
no, but that's good. I think it's important because you never know when people are going to join us. That might be their very first. This might be their first episode, or the last one might. So it's good to cue them in. This is the only place we talk about TV. So enjoy it if you're new.
It's the only place we talk about talking about TV is right now.
Yeah.
It's the only place that you'll be reminded that we're talking about TV right now.
All right. So speaking of TV, I've been watching and sports. I've been watching Hard Knocks on Max. It comes out comes out about like August-ish. It starts to get you really pumped up for football. It's like, is that time again? It is that time again. And you know, you got Lev Schreiber doing the most amazing voiceovers ever. Like it's just, he says the most cheesy lines, but somehow it works with that voice. Like you could just listen to him say anything. He'll be like, birthday parties are fun, but on the field, there's no time for cake. And it's just like,
yes,
so
I just
dumb.
Heard it.
But
it makes
works.
Sense to me.
I know.
Yeah.
It works. So I've been watching that, and it gets you pumped up for football. And they're like, it's like the flagship Max show now. I mean, they come out with one this time, and then it's an in-season one they're going to have with the AFC North. And then there's one that's off-season. It's like, here's the off-season version. It's like, oh, my gosh, a lot of Hard Knocks. But it's good. I like
it. Yeah. You know what? Leave what they call him, right?
What
his nickname?
No.
The Voice of God.
Oh, yeah. I remember Aaron Rodgers saying that. That's right. The voice
of God. Yeah.
Pete Holmes has a good sketch where he's like, what if God sounds like, hey, guys, how you doing? You're just like, oh, no.
I would love it. I'd be like, wow.
You would love it.
So different than what I anticipated.
Yeah. You just roll with it. Like, here we are for all eternity. I guess we have to listen to that. Okay, cool.
Wow. We've really gone downhill.
Anyway. All right. Secondly, I have to recommend Stranger Things. I know almost everyone has watched this. I get it. But listen, we just started watching it as a family. And that's what I want to recommend. If you have kids that are like in the 11-ish, 12-ish range, I think they can handle it. Now, use your discretion. But we have been watching this as a family, and it has been so fun. It's like the younger kids' first legit streaming experience, and like, you know, to the point where at the end of every episode they're like, one more, please, no, please, and like they get it, they understand like this beautiful format where you like what we're talking about with TV, where you can tell a story in 10 hours and get such a rich investment in the characters and the plot. It's their first time really digging that, and it's been so fun to go through it. So we're on like season 2 and they're having a blast. So if you haven't watched it as like a whole fam, you want to revisit it, I'd recommend it.
So I like that you mentioned this, because I think that there is like family, depending on how old your kids are, there are some family films, and like we did Back to the Future. I know you did too.
Yep.
But like recently did I tried to get the kids into Mandalorian.
Of course, we watched that
so,
too.
So, I mean, yeah. That's old news, but like my kids, we started watching it again and they really love it now. But they didn't like it a couple years ago.
Okay, so they're finally at the level. Yeah.
Yeah, so you watch one episode a night or one episode, you know, however, I think exactly. One a night keeps a kid's interest. You hang out, you go, what do you think about that? They love the Baby Yoda.
It becomes a tradition. You cook popcorn and we do the same thing, like one episode mm-hmm. a night and sometimes on the weekends too as a special treat. It's just a really fun thing to do as a family. I agree.
I also think it's so much better. Like my kids, if left to their own devices, would be on their own devices. So this is much better because, you know, how many YouTube videos about I'll give you $1 million if you do this.
Oh, gosh.
Can you watch? I can't.
I know.
I can't watch that crap.
No. Nope.
Anyway, so this is more, I think it's cooler for kids to have a narrative and to get that narrative structure. It's good for them for a lot of reasons. I know. I'm like, watch movies. It's good for your kids.
It is.
Yeah, and it forces them to kind of follow a narrative over time, which I think
and
is
it's
good.
Those discussions that you have as a family is actually really beneficial. Yeah, if you're watching good art, I think, you know, that it's totally a valuable investment.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
All right, one more. On Max, it's a show that I just got into. It's called Industry. Now, I first heard of this show when I started reading rave reviews for the latest season because they're on season 3. And everyone's like, this show has gotten so good. And the general narrative from the critics was season 1, they find their footing. And then season 2 or 3, it's like just perfect. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I can slog through one season that's like still finding its way. That's normal for season 1. Well, I'm loving season 1. I'm like totally digging it. So this is about Wall Street. And it's basically like you start off at the beginning with a bunch of graduates, like they're just fresh graduates, fresh meat, and they're told on day one that in 6 months, half of you are going to be let go on Rift Day. And so basically make an impact, make an impression. And then there they are with their computer doing Wall Street trades and trying to like make a name for themselves. And what I love about this show, the best thing about it, they do not explain anything. Like, I have no idea what's going on half the time. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know what they're doing. But it's fun because you're just like a little fly on the wall of this weird alien universe. And you understand the emotions. You understand, like, the heart of what's happening, even though you don't understand any of the lingo. And they don't dumb it down. It's not like The Big Short where they're like, hey, this is what a bond is. Like, they don't even care. It's just like, you're here. You're going to watch it.
None of the, Adam McKay?
Yeah, Adam
None
McKay
of the,
stuff.
Like, yeah, like The Big Short.
Right.
What's a credit default swap? Well, let me have this famous movie star explain it to you
or
while
this
drinking
model in a
champagne
yeah,
in a
exactly,
bathtub. Yeah.
Exactly. No, I know. So I actually think it's like one of the greatest strengths that it doesn't bother to explain because it keeps it interesting. You're just like, wow, there's something important is happening, but I don't know what. It's great. So watch Industry. I really, really like it. And apparently season 2 and 3 is like out of this world. So
I did start watching something you mentioned.
Oh, what
like
did you
two
watch?
Podcasts ago,
yeah.
You mentioned the Abraham Lincoln show.
You started watching Manhunt. Yeah, what'd you think?
It was interesting.
Yeah.
It's definitely like they did a good job, like what you said, with the styling of it, the set design.
You feel like you're there. I mean, it's really, yeah.
I can smell horses when I watch it, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool, but I haven't gotten like deep into it, but it is kind of like a soap opera for your dad.
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it.
It's like
it.
You can watch this barbecue show, or you can watch this soap opera about the Civil War. Mm-hmm. It's fun.
It's good. I like it. I dug it. I really like the theater, the recreation of the actual like assassination in episode 1. I thought it was like, wow, yeah. I for the first time, I really like got the visceral impact of that. It was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can go to Ford's Theater.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So that's where they actually filmed it. I think. I mean, okay. I'm assuming because. It would be a hard thing to recreate and much mm-hmm. easier to go to the national. So it's a national park, actually.
Okay. Got it.
So you can go see the box that he was in. It's kind of neat. I've done it before once.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you're watching that. Let me know how it goes when you keep going.
We'll see.
All right, Tim, we are here to talk about a movie, and I'm really excited to talk about it with you. So let me kind of frame the experience of how I stumbled onto this thing. So it's twofold. First of all, I really didn't want us to review another dumb movie because Long Legs was kind of scarring, and like we both invested this time in this terrible film, and I was like, I can't do it again. I can't. So I was like, okay. First, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a movie that we like that the critics have been talking about throughout the year. Like, so I looked at a bunch of top 10 lists and I'm like, what are some that keep appearing on the list? You know, the same one keeps popping up. And this movie that we're going to talk about was one of them. But then I was like, that's not good enough because I'm not going to subject him to another terrible movie. So I'm going to watch it and preview it myself. So I'd had a really long week at work. I had to train two interns. Two interns started on the same day, Tim. at in my department.
Oh my gosh.
I was like bouncing around from desk to desk all week. Like, these are babies. I have to babysit them on top of getting all my normal work done. It was awful. Anyway, fine. I got to the end of the week. I was exhausted. So I woke up on Saturday and I just did something I never do. I just stayed in bed. Stayed in bed and turned on a movie. And it was the most delightful thing. I'd highly recommend that. And so anyway, so I turned on this movie. I saw the TV glow because that's the one I had picked out. And I was like, let's just give it a try and see if it's good. And I was blown away. It was glorious. It was everything I've been wanting in a film. And it just knocked me out. And so I texted you and I was like, I found the movie. So it was so good that I went outside of the bedroom and I was like, we're watching this movie this weekend. We're watching this. There's two, my oldest and Emily, my wife. And they were like, okay, whatever, fine. So Sunday night, I forced them to watch this movie. They love it. And then I get a text from you that says, I didn't like the movie, man. And I was like, yes. Because this is going to be such a great conversation because I can't even actually understand how someone wouldn't like this movie. So I'm excited to talk about this with you. And here we are. I saw the TV glow. So I just showed you my experience. What was your streaming experience of this, man?
I rented it and I was hoping to rent it, like watch it twice, but I only got to watch it once.
That's okay.
Just ran out of time to do that. So I watched it at my house. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
What is your primary? Do you rent on Amazon when you rent streaming?
I rent on Amazon because it's all in one space because I started renting on Amazon.
Uh-huh.
So all the stuff I own or rent is all in one spot.
Yeah. I think that's the main hub. That's where I usually rent to. But I know YouTube, you can rent movies on there. And I think there's a couple Apple. Other places. Apple. That's right. Apple. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. This is available to rent on any of those platforms for, I think, $4, something like that. So
yeah, it's cheap.
It's cheap.
So I think to say I didn't like it I don't think I'm probably more, I wasn't as moved by it as you were.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably maybe more because there are elements that I love about it.
Yeah. And I think there really is sort of a generational thing going on with this movie because the critics are really divided about it too. Like some critics are like D+ and some critics are like best movie I've seen in a long, long time. So there's definitely a divide and I think it either speaks to you or it doesn't. And as a millennial who grew up in the 90s, I feel like this movie is made for us. Like this literally made for my age. Like, so let's get into the plot before we get into more of that. So how would we describe the plot of this movie? I definitely wanted to cover it this time since we totally missed it on Long Legs. It was such a bad movie that we just missed covering the plot, by the way.
Oh, really?
We did. You caught it at the very end, but like it was the first time we just breezed right by.
We're just like, forget it. It's not worth your time. All right, let's keep going. Okay.
Exactly.
So the plot, I'm going to let you summarize the plot.
Okay. So it's set in the 90s. This is, like I said, this is basically if you were a 13-year-old kid or 11-year-old kid in the 90s, this is the movie for you. And it's like the director of the film was born in 1987. So like that's the age we're talking about here. I was born in 85. So we grew up on Nickelodeon. We grew up watching cheesy 90s television and we had like our kids network. You know, it was Nickelodeon. You watch Salute Your Shorts and Pete and Pete and whatever these shows that I don't think you have a reference point for, right?
No, I watched Pete and Pete.
You watched Pete and Pete? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a great show. I'd watch great that show. Thing even in high school. Yeah. No, Pete and Pete is like a quirky, fantastic show. If you've never seen Pete and Pete, I don't know how you stream it now, but it would be worth your time.
Totally.
The World's Strongest Man's there. Yeah. it's just quirky and cool and has such a great, that intro song is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's very Canadian feeling.
Yeah. So this movie, their show, like that they're obsessed with, is called The Pink Opaque, and it's on the Young Adult Network, aka Nickelodeon, and it comes on at like 10:30 before, as they say in the movie, before the network goes black and white for the old people, which is exactly what happened on Nickelodeon. It would become Nick at Night and you'd have the Dick Van Dyke Show and, you know, all the old stuff. And so they're watching The Pink Opaque and they're obsessed with it. And so the movie kind of follows them as they're this one boy named Owen. He can't watch the show because his bedtime is like 10 and his parents are super strict. And so he can't watch the show. So he meets a girl named Maddie. Maddie loves the show and Maddie invites him over to watch the show. And he has to kind of sneak over to her place to watch it. And so that's kind of where it starts. And then later, fast forward, Maddie disappears and then comes back and tells Owen that maybe this show, this Pinko Pig show, wasn't just a show after all. Maybe, in fact, they were characters on this show, and Owen's kind of whole world sort of implodes, and he wonders whether that's true. And that's all I'm going to say in the spoiler-free section. We will get to more spoilers later.
Thank you. Thank you for not spoiling it. Okay. Yes. I appreciate it. Yet.
We'll get to it. I just like to, you know, wait for the major spoilers, but it's okay. So anyway, that's it. Did I leave anything out? I think that's right? That's good.
I don't think so. I don't think there's like, we'll get more into like influences of, because I think we're already talking about it. Like Nick at Night is an influence.
Yep.
If you don't know about Nick at Night, well, let's talk. I know you kind of summarized a little bit, but Nick at Night was like this whole thing devoted to kind of like a young teen audience or a preteen audience of shows that were geared just to kids.
Well, Nick at Night was actually, I think, more towards...
Oh, no, like you're the, right. You're right. That was That's the old stuff.
People. But Snick, there was this Snick thing.
Saturday Night Nick.
This big orange sofa, and you would watch Are You Afraid of the Dark? And it was like...
Oh, that's a good show.
Yeah.
So there are all these great shows that are like... Yeah, some of them are kind of like Twilight Zone-y. The closest thing I can think of is like Goosebumps is kind of like that.
Yep.
And but it's like they're actually scary sometimes,
especially when you're a kid.
Witty,
I mean,
they're witty, and they like honor that a kid is not. They honor kids like brains, like that kids could get weird, funny jokes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think they're fantastic, quirky, artsy. Ren and Stimpy, I think, was on that too.
Yeah, Ren and Stimpy, sure.
Yeah, so I thought it was really cool. I haven't seen anything that has been quite the same. And this is in the TV era. There's nothing streaming yet. Mm-hmm. So kids would like gather around their TVs, kids that couldn't drive cars. That's kind of the cutoff for this.
Yep.
Kids that couldn't drive cars would gather around the TV, hang out with their buddies, invite them over and watch Snick. So it's like a cultural phenomenon that we don't have a parallel to now, I don't think.
I agree. Yeah. It's that kind of appointment television that you just have lost in the streaming era for sure. And, you know, Maddie says at one point that sometimes the Pinko Pig seems more real than real life. And I think that's where the relating element comes in. Like, as if you had kind of a tough childhood, which I did, you know, absent father and just like poor and bullied and a lot of stuff going on, these shows really did seem larger than life. They were kind of your escape. And I think this show really hits on that.
I totally agree. I feel like these are like a true escape on a Saturday night, you know, especially and like you talked about. Poor. It's like you didn't have to pay. If you had cable, you were good to go.
Yep.
Or if a friend had cable, you could go do that. And you didn't have to spend any money. You could get a big 2-liter pop and share that with people and just hang out with your, you know, with your crew and watch these shows. And you feel like that there's some other place where you aren't. You're not there, but somewhere these wonderful things are occurring.
Where the problems are solved in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember feeling like, oh, this is what I want my life to be more like, is this. Like some of those shows, like Pete and Pete, that was the big one for me.
I'm so glad you liked that. Yeah, that we have a connecting point there. That's great.
Yeah, where do you want to go next with this?
So acting. We'll talk about Justice Smith is the primary character here, or primary actor who plays Owen. But we got to give a shout out to the younger version of Owen. This kid Ian Foreman played him. I thought it was just a beautiful, subtle child performance. Like, I saw myself in that kid so much. The shyness, just the insecurity. You know, this girl, Maddie, who's older, talks to him and, like, says one thing that comes across a little mean and abrasive, and he just shuts down. And, like, I just saw myself in him so much, and I thought it was just a really tender performance for the younger kid. Did you think so, too?
Yeah, I thought, and also didn't stand out, like, in a bad way, which is, like, to me, the goal of almost every kid performance.
Yep.
It's like to have it feel natural is like the goal. Because if it stands out, oh, does it stand out in a bad way usually?
Yes. Yeah. And so then you flash forward to Justice Smith. Now, I'm not super familiar with him. I know he's been in like all the Jurassic World movies, but don't watch them.
He's in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, Dungeons and Dragons. That's what I was going to say. The only time I've really sat with him for 2 hours was Dungeons and Dragons. You missed out on that podcast, but me and Dan did a podcast on that, and it was really good. And he was really funny and entertaining in that movie. Did you ever actually see it, by the way?
I saw the movie and listened to the podcast, but it's been a while.
There you go. It was good, right? Really good.
Yeah, and my family really enjoyed watching that.
Perfect.
It was a good movie.
It was a really good movie. That's on my top 10 list for that year, which some people probably balk at. But like, honestly, it was a really good, entertaining film.
I also learned new things about Dan's father, who was dumpster diving for D&D pieces.
Yes.
Which might have been against his religion, but I'm not sure.
That was a great podcast. Go listen to the Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Dan shares some wonderful things in that. And how what D&D is all about.
Yeah, it's really an excellent one. I recommend.
Yep. So Justice Smith, that's where we've kind of seen him. And I don't know what, as far as him in this movie, I feel like there was also a subtlety there. Like he was kind of a blank canvas. Like, I think that was the character, right? Because he was just so like conflicted inside and didn't know how to be who he thought he was or even who he was. And so I thought he did a great job here. What were your thoughts on him as Owen?
Yeah, just plays an introvert and a lead role.
Yeah.
He's a little moody, a little tortured, but like not can like still function in social situations. And so kind of like it's somebody he played a person that has a rich internal life, but doesn't really let anybody in very easily.
Yeah. Which I so relate to as a kid. I mean, totally. I was like, I mean, if you would have looked at me walking around my high school, I was just kept to myself. You know, I had like one or two friends and like, but inside there's a whole world in there that no one could see. And like, I just get that. So Maddie is played by Bridget Lundy Payne. Also not in anything that I was notable to me. So, I mean, one thing about this director is that they are really good at finding young talent because I watched their first film. They have one other film. It's on Max. It's called We're All Going to the World's Fair. And that's also filled with young people. And like, so they're really just really good at like finding kind of younger talent and getting great performances out of them. So Bridget Lundy Payne, she plays Maddie. And yeah, I don't know. I also related to Maddie because as someone who was very much like Owen, very shy, very insecure, there were a couple girls who did talk to me. They weren't like I knew the cheerleader girls or whatever. They were never going to talk to me because like I was just, they were on a different plane. But like there were a couple girls like Maddie who were like kind of nerdy into some of the same shows like X-Files and Buffy and stuff. And we could like have a connecting point. And but like at the same time, they were way cooler than you. And you knew that like it was a privilege that they were talking to you. At least that's how I felt when I was a kid. And I think that's how Owen feels too. And so I definitely recognized her and I thought she was great. And she has some really standout monologue scenes that kind of blew me away too. So yeah, what'd you think of her?
I think good. Just good. I don't have any.
It's not like you, this isn't like Kate Winslet, you know, winning an Oscar.
No.
It's just like they're playing characters. I don't know. Yeah.
And they're also playing kids.
They're playing kids.
For most of the movie. And so she's playing a young person who, you know, doesn't connect with the social world around her.
Yeah.
And has no, she's like, I don't have any handles for this world and my parents aren't, I got to get out of here.
Yes. So something going on in her home life. She kind of casually mentions that if you get caught in my basement, my dad will break my nose again or something. And you're just like, wait, what? And she just tosses that off as like a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of really scary. Yeah.
Really scary.
Fred Durst is in this movie.
Yeah. Fred Durst plays Owen's dad and it's creepy. And like, so Owen also has a weird family situation. It's a blended family of some sort. And he just like, definitely you can tell the dad, like the mom kind of defers to the dad and the dad is very absent slash maybe emotionally abusive. I don't know. Like when Owen wants to watch the Pink Opaque, like the only line Fred Durst utters in the movie is, isn't that a show for girls or something like that? And so there's something going on there that just is kind of oppressive in Owen's life. And yeah, Fred Durst, how about that?
Yeah.
Of the band Limp Bizkit, which as a child of the 90s was very popular in my high school. I, of course, never listened to it because that was the devil's music, but all of my classmates did, and it was very popular.
I don't even think the devil listens to that.
It's so bad the devil doesn't even like it.
The devil's like, I got worse things to do with my time than this.
Limp Bizkit, Korn, Slipknot, these were big bands back in that day. Yeah.
Yeah. And also like kind of symbols of, I think in the early 2000s, we had this hypersexualization of young girls. And then we had the toxic masculinity. Like Fred Durst is like a symbol of toxic masculinity.
The red baseball cap, all of it.
Yeah. And then like, even like the lyrics, I mean like his famous song, I did it all for the nookie.
Yeah.
I mean like what?
Oh my gosh.
But he's like a symbol of like all that's like not living. Yeah, just like it's just not, it's just toxic masculine, violent kind of behavior.
And Eminem came up right around that same time and there's all that misogyny and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I think it's not happenstance that Durst is cast in this role because I think he is a symbol of all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this one scene I love where Owen comes home and the TV is just glowing off their, his dad's face, and the dad just like stares at Owen and he looks like the devil with the TV just glowing off of him, and like it's just such an abstract, beautiful like symbol, and I think that's exactly what it's getting at. Yeah. So yeah, not only Fred Durst, but also Phoebe Bridgers is in this movie. She is a singer. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She is a singer in her own right, but also duets with a lot of famous alternative bands, which I love, like Bright Eyes and The National and stuff like that. So she's a big hit in the indie world, and I like her a lot.
That's pretty fun.
She is in that musical sequence at the club.
Yeah. I remember.
Yep, yeah. Yep, yep. So yeah, all right, Tim, let's get to the meat of this. So the writer and director of this is Jane Schoenbrunn, and this is their second film. And I watched the first one, like I said, We're All Going to the World's Fair. I thought that one was okay. I'd give it like a B-minus. It was very similar to this in that there was definitely a metaphor that they were going for about like kind of suicidal ideation, and the metaphor was like this streaming challenge or whatever, and it didn't quite work. It was okay, good performances, kind of creepy, but like didn't quite come together. It was sort of felt like a testing ground for this film. Like all the elements were there, but not quite refined, and then this sort of brought it all together. So that was the first film, but I just really liked what they did in this movie so much. But before I gush over it, you mentioned you didn't like it, or at least that it didn't like blow you away like it did for me. So what were your thoughts on what they did and what kind of didn't work for you?
It was super atmospheric. So like one of the influences of this director is David Lynch.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So like Twin Peaks, I don't know if you've seen Twin Peaks or not.
I still haven't, but I know about it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good. So watch your SNCC and your Twin Peaks, also early 90s. Was it 1990, I think, is Twin Peaks?
Yep.
So it has a Twin Peaks atmospheric vibe. It has like the cinematography is like to create mood. I know all cinematography does that, but this is not.
It stands out. This does.
It stands out. And I'm used to like if I'm looking at a small independent film, I'm usually like, oh, this will be character driven, idea driven. And I think that you could argue that for this film, but a lot of it's atmospheric. So it's kind of surreal.
Yep, exactly.
And from the very beginning, the ice cream truck scene. Is that right? Yeah.
That's right. It opens with that beautiful shot of going down the street to the ice cream truck. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And so the cinematography is just, that was the best part of this, but I know we haven't gotten to that. But as far as like the actual film itself, I feel like I wanted something that was a little bit more dialogue rich.
Okay.
That kind of had more story arc. And I know that there is that in this, but it's so moody and quiet that I had a hard time personally. Like I had a hard time accessing some of that and felt like, oh, this could have been done in 45 minutes.
So you felt like the mood kind of overtook the substance of the characters and
yeah. Or like, that's why I said I want to watch it twice, because sometimes like if you get a real moody film, if you watch it two or three times, like that will sink in more. And maybe I just missed it, which I think is, that happens. It happens to anybody. Even if you watch a lot of film, you could miss some of the symbolism. You can miss some of the director's intent if you don't watch the film multiple times.
I'd recommend it, because my kid, his advisor at school is really into movies, and he said that didn't connect with him on the first go, so he tried it again, and that's when it really like came together for him. So it could be a second watch sort of experience that
And I'm open to that. I think that it's a beautiful film.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the aesthetics of the film. I didn't think that it was like as aha, because I kind of came into it going, oh yeah, I know what's going on. Like I kind of figured out the metaphor really quickly. So that's okay. You don't have to have an aha moment all the time. But I do think it did a good job talking about the struggle that this person was having, is being alienated from everyone around them and from themselves.
Yes.
And like having an internal battle with yourself. I think like trying to, who's in charge and who am I and who's the brave part of me and who's not, and who, just all the emotional struggle, I think, that you, this film and some of the moodiness of it did capture some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I'm excited to get into those themes with you. But like, I agree, the cinematography was so good. So the cinematographer was Eric Yu. He's done almost nothing, which is so surprising mm-hmm. to me because it was just beautiful. And I think it's like Oscar-worthy cinematography. The only thing I recognized was that he did the music video for this song called Kiss Me, I Loved You by Father John Misty, which I love, speaking of alternative music. But so he's just like, yeah, it was gorgeous. And like from that opening shot, and there's this one scene where Maddie is talking, does this monologue about dying or being buried alive or something. And this, they're in this planetarium and it just washes, like the planets wash over her face. And it's just gorgeous. Like it really does stand out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like the use of voiceover too, because voiceover can be really bad and a crutch that it just impales a movie. If it's like a voice of God, like you said, situation, except in a movie, I think it just does not work. But I love how they took more of a Fight Club approach where it was the characters talking to you, filling in important details, but also still as the characters talking right to the viewer. I think that works so well, and it worked really well here too.
So that's interesting. I didn't draw a Fight Club parallel, but now that you mention it, that will help me think about this film better. Yeah, that's actually really helpful. And that's like one of these films about masculinity.
Yeah, definitely. Hyper-masculinity.
Am I man enough? Yeah.
It's so funny watching Fight Club because like I watched that as a kid, or not as a kid, but like in college I watched it and I was like, Brad Pitt is so cool. I want to be Brad Pitt.
He's so badass. Yeah, I wish I could be like that guy.
And then I watched it at 38 and I'm just like, he's so toxic and awful. I'm like, this is not good.
Yeah. Just like chaos and destruction everywhere around him. Yeah. But I think with Fight Club, there's a battle for identity. And I think that there's a lot of overlap here. And I don't know if that was, you know, my guess not, that wasn't intentional or wasn't, you know, meant to have that. But it does have a lot as far as plot wise. There's a lot going on there.
Right. But they do. It could be intentional because they do that same exact approach where the character just sort of churns and fills you in. And like you feel like you're being filled mm-hmm. in on the details, which I think works well. There's just in any great movie, that just blows my mind. And I'm like, this is one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. There's all these very little moments that just add up. And they're like kind of little moments that you wouldn't normally see in a movie that kind of make it very unique. And so like there's like this one scene in the movie where Owen's mom just sort of the scene begins with Owen's mom staring at the camera, and like that is just so interesting, like just such a weird way to start a scene. Owen lying down in the back of the car, you know, and the planetarium, and just I don't know, there's just so many little moments. Oh, and even that like musical scene, you know, where they're in a club and Maddie is talking to Owen, and they just linger on these musical performances. You don't normally make time for that in a movie, but I thought it was so interesting and provocative.
So it's so David Lynch. Like that is so
is
David
it?
Lynch.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So you just like you marinate in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would recommend, like, John, you got to watch Twin Peaks.
Got to watch Twin Peaks. I'm familiar with Lynch because I like, you know, Mulholland Drive and stuff, but I just never saw Twin Peaks. I know I need to watch it.
Also atmospheric. That's totally noir. Twin Peaks. I don't know how you would. Yeah. And Twin Peaks is definitely. Yeah, it would be worth watching. It'd be worth watching for you.
I've heard rave reviews.
But you can see that this director is in that lineage.
Yes.
Of Lynch. Yeah. And then so this is another kind of like little clues to the puzzle is that apparently it's supposed to be like, this is Buffy the Vampire Slayer is the pink opaque.
I think it's like Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Power Rangers is kind of the vibe of that. That's what my wife said anyway. I got to credit my wife, Emily, for that. She came up with that.
Yeah.
So I think that's totally true. All right, let's dive into some themes, man. I'm really excited about it. So where do you want to start? We kind of already talked about art and how, because I think that is a big thing, how art becomes larger than life, especially as kids, you know, and it starts to really shape us and provides an escape. It's almost even too like, you know, have you ever gone back to your childhood home or your childhood school and it's so smaller and like it's something so different about it? That plays into this movie too, because time for spoilers. We're going to get into spoilers. We always do about this section. But basically, the pink opaque is, well, we'll get into like the metaphor of it. But Owen realizes as he watches it, in the, like he grow, we follow Owen as he grows up to become a full-on adult, and he's able to go revisit the pink opaque on streaming, and it's nothing like he remembers. Like the movie itself, like when we watch it at the beginning when he's a kid, it's like really cool visuals and actually really scary. Owen watches it when he's like an adult, and it's just trash. It's like just, and that it, that probably would be how Pete and Pete is for us, you know? It's that same thing.
Yeah, so that we have this idealized vision of probably as we're becoming, right? Because in adolescence, everyone is becoming something else.
Yeah.
And so as we're becoming, we hold on to these kind of things that we valued at that point. So even like, and it could be anything, it could be like, you know, even like we talked about Linkletter last time or two times ago, like holding on to like these stages. And sometimes for, it could be a TV show, it could be a movie. And then we really want to like hold on to it. And then we go back and look at it. And we're like, wow, this thing that I put all this value in may or may not have been that valuable. But at that time, it was very important to me.
Does it even matter at that point, right? Whether it was quote unquote good art, if it connected with you at the time. And also like what power these people writing kid shows have, because you are meeting a kid as they're becoming themselves and kind of forming a part of them. That's like something I've never really thought about before, but it's kind of, yeah, there's a lot of power there.
So like if there isn't a an environment where your family does provide, because like part of me is saying your family, like one of the roles of family is to say, is to help you become who you are, right?
Yeah.
To support you, to care for you no matter what. Like that's part of like one of our goals, right? As families, is that we would care for our kids no matter what. We would provide a safe environment, a safe place to be who they are. And that we would encourage them. And if they had something they're really passionate about, obviously, as long as it wasn't going to hurt them, we would pursue that with them. Or like, hey, what can I do to be helpful to you?
That's where you're supposed to cultivate that, right?
That's how it should be. But we don't see that in the film at all. We see that the family is scary. Mm-hmm. And so where do you go? You might go to the pink opaque for your, okay, I need to cultivate my identity. I need somewhere I feel safe. Oh, it's this show.
Yeah. And I can so relate to that. And I think so many people can relate to that because we have broken families and like, you know, our parents are doing our best, but a lot of times the best wasn't providing that safety and that nurturing that we needed. And so we looked for it in other places and we looked for it even in TV shows. And yeah, powerful.
And there's like so many symbols. I need to watch this movie again.
You got to watch it again.
There are so many symbols in this movie. I'm like even picking up on them now, like the fish tank that has no fish.
Yeah.
like it's this giant, well-kept fish tank with no fish in it at all. Yeah. There's all this stuff. I need to go back and watch it. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, and then secondly, you know, what we learn is that the pink opaque is a metaphor. And so when Maddie comes back and she talks about like, hey, you know, we were characters in this show. It wasn't just a show. And like, I have actually been to the pink opaque and you too can go there. And she says the way to go there is I've got it all planned for us. We have to be buried alive, like basically in the dirt. And then we will rise again in this show. And the metaphor there is, I think it speaks first to a narrow intention from the director and then also a broad appeal. So we'll go with the narrow intention first. So Jane Schoenbrunn is a trans filmmaker and they have transitioned and like that this they've been open that this is kind of they're coming out, you know, what it's like to come out and what it's like to feel like there's a part of you inside that is trapped and you can't let it out and you're scared to let it out. And in Owen's case, we actually see what happens if you live your whole life and never let it out, right? It's sort of like a character who gets a call to adventure and then just rejects it. And we see that this very haunting ending where Owen gets all the way to the end of his life and he hasn't let his true self out. And he's basically so torn up inside that he lets out this primal scream in this room. He's still working at the same place he's been working at for 30 years. And he's at this inane birthday party and he lets out this primal scream and the whole room just freezes and ignores him while he's like having this flip out episode. And the movie ends in like the most haunting way where he is like apologizing to everyone for being too emotional or whatever, or having that moment. And that's how it ends, is like him almost apologizing for existing, which I thought was so scary.
Yeah. So, and it's at a family fun center.
Yes.
So it's like he doesn't, his family's all dead or they're, you know, estranged. And I think it's not just about coming out. I think it's about, in this film, it's about being brave enough with yourself.
That's it. Yeah, that's why it speaks, I think. There's like the specific element, which is what like the original intention, I think, of the film. But then it speaks so broadly to anyone who has kind of mm-hmm. lost touch with or feels that conflict, which I totally felt growing up, of like feeling like I'm supposed to believe this thing. I'm supposed to be this thing. But there's something else. But I'm too scared to let it out. Exactly.
And I think the more we identify with that idea, because I don't think that's not just an idea for trans people. That's like an idea for people.
Yes.
Which is there's an expectation. Now, I'm not saying they're the same thing. I'm saying it's a theme that is a human theme.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's elevated for somebody that's got pressure from the inside, outside, and everywhere to not be who they are. Or not share who they are with themselves and with the world.
Right. But I think, to be fair, before we get to like how it speaks to, I think, all of us who have been down that road, I think we should spend a minute to also recognize that, like, for trans people, for gay people, like, this is a huge deal. And this is something mm-hmm. that I think, as heterosexual people, you and me, I mean, you know, it took some time for us to maybe get there and to understand. And I think a lot of people are still not quite understanding, because I think there's this misperception that is prominently portrayed that's like, you know, gay people just they were like, you know, liking the opposite gender one day, and then they're like, hey, what if I tried this out? Or like trans people were like, hey, what if I put on a dress? And I was just like, you know, but what they fail to understand is this is life or death for a lot of people. This is like my mm-hmm. brain does not match what is going on inside, and I'm dying. Like, like what really turned the table for me when it comes to the whole gay issue was Justin Lee. He was talked about how like he grew up as a good Christian kid. He knew being gay was wrong. Obviously, you're not supposed to be gay. And then, to his horror, at puberty, he realized he was gay. And he spent every night of his life in his teenage years praying that God would take it away, because it was a sin and it was evil, and he knew he would go to hell. And then, like, so that's what's going on here. It's not a flippant choice, whatever. It's actually like life or death. If you think about even the Matrix, we talk about the Matrix a lot. The Wachowskis, they transitioned. Lena Wachowski talks about, like, this is after the Matrix, after being rich and successful mm-hmm. and everything, going out into the middle of the ocean to kill themselves. Like, they were like, I can't, I'm done. Like, I'm done. This is what's going on. And I think it's important to recognize that.
So one of the things I do is I'm a chaplain for my work, and I work at a kid hospital. And we get trained in a lot of different things. And one of the things that I've learned recently is that there's a high rate of suicide for trans kids.
Mm.
And I think it's one thing to have an ideology, you know, you might have some kind of like Christian ideology about this.
Sure.
It's a whole other thing to see a kid that is so tortured and tormented that they'd rather be dead than be here. And so I think that's been, for me personally, been very eye-opening in realizing like how deep that struggle is without, I mean, obviously neither one of us has gone through this struggle, so it's hard for us to even speak of it.
Yeah.
But that's what I've seen kids that have taken their life or have attempted to take their life because they're wrestling with the same thing that this movie's talking about. So this is life and death, like literally it's life and death. And then to have a safe place to just be, I think that's, to me, that's like super important.
And to have the compassion for people and love to move beyond whatever your ideology is, right? Like maybe you genuinely believe that the scriptures don't support whatever you want to say about gender and stuff. But it kind of reminds me of that when Jesus confronted the Pharisees, because they, like, you know, they were following the law. They were doing all these things. And Jesus was like, you're putting all these heavy burdens on people and not lifting a finger to help them, you know? And there's this point where like our ideology and our beliefs are good, but we need to see the people that we're talking about and mm-hmm. see what's, you know, that it's at some point their people's lives are more important than our beliefs. They just are.
See people and listen to people and hear and be willing to hear. That's a hard thing for me. I'm not very good at hearing, but yeah. So that, having worked in the hospital, so basically adolescents who are transgender, has been very eye-opening for me and has really changed. Just, I'm beginning to see how just the very tip of the iceberg of how brutal this is for folks.
Yeah.
The high suicide rates, the parents who want to basically do a lot of like behavior modification because they're grieving the gender of their child. Mm. So I will get my child back to the gender that I want the child to be. Those kind of things. Yeah.
And the way the culture vilifies it, like, the, you know, like, I mean, we're seeing this play out. We're in an election year. Things are tense. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing all these issues come to the forefront. And just the way that, like, the way that people talk about it, like, oh, they want to get in people's bathrooms. They want to, you know, they treat them like degenerates and perverts when, you know, maybe some people like that exist. I'm not saying that that's impossible. I'm just saying
There's degenerates and perverts everywhere.
Well, exactly.
But that's not the issue. That's like, that to me is red herring kind of crap.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with this. But like, to me, like, it's just some basic, like, care and compassion for people is, and to get yourself out of your own ideology and into like some empathy.
That's right. And we see the parents are kind of the front lines of this because when it's your kid, you know, you can believe all you want, but then it's your kid who's gay or who's trans. And suddenly you have to rethink things because of course you have natural compassion for your child. And like, so what does that mean when it comes to your doorstep?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think it's hard for us to speak. We're like, oh yeah, we're cisgender white guys who are heterosexual. And so I think it's hard for us to speak to this because I don't know if you talked more about like alienation. Cause one of the other themes is like being alienated from your family as far as themes go.
Yeah.
Or feeling estranged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what really spoke to me on my own personal level was two things. Like one, yeah, growing up and feeling like, you know, my mom did her best, but like it was just me and her. And she, you know, I had a rotating line of stepdads, and it just always felt like home wasn't safe. Home was very like, there was a lot of pressure on me emotionally, and I just wanted to be a kid, you know. And that's where I found such comfort in these shows and like anything I could do to escape life that felt very like just constantly dangerous and off. I don't know exactly how to put it, but that's one of them. And then the second thing is just my faith. Like I went on this massive deconstruction journey and reconstruction. And I think that's what this movie is talking about. Whatever it is, deconstruction and reconstruction is really the point of the film. It's death and resurrection, you know, where you kind of like die to a certain version of yourself and come out the other side into something else. And that happened to me. But I mean, very recently, like in my 30s, you know, like I was looking at things in a review I wrote 9 years ago, and because someone came on to trash it and said, you know, it was just toxic religion and like all this stuff. And I was looking at it, and I was embarrassed like at what I wrote because, you know, I'm thinking like I wrote this at 29. And I believed it wholeheartedly, all this stuff. And like, so I was just, you know, I was doing what I was writing what I believed in. And now I look at it and it's like, I would rewrite that whole thing. It would all be different now. But like, we have to give grace to those versions of ourselves. But at the same time, I'm glad that I did die to that version of myself. And it was scary. It was scary in the same way that when Owen is following Maddie across the football field, we're like, dude, don't get buried alive. Like that's not cool. Like that's not good, but that's what it takes to actually like come out the other side and be who you need to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is a lot of like this. So like heavy expectation about your external and internal life is like, I think some part of kind of a fundamentalist view.
Yeah.
And so I think that like, so as much as like a fundamentalist doesn't want to have anything to do with the transgender community, they might have a lot in common where there's a heavy expectation. There's this heavy expectation on outward behavior for a lot of these transgender kids, and they don't ever feel safe. And there's just a live into something that they deeply don't feel that they can live into. And so it's either you can create a bifurcated self where you have to have two different, you're basically code switching and you have two different people that you are, yeah, you're cut in half.
Totally.
Or you have to like consider that maybe that you can't live into this. Maybe there's a different way.
It's code switching and it divide itself. That's so true. It's like you would go to church. You know, I grew up like when my church was very like fundamentalist, very like toxic, like all revolved around one guy and his views on, which was basically like we should be praying all the time and like movies are probably not something we should be wasting our time with, etc. But then I'm just like, I love movies. Like, so what would happen is you'd all week we'd be watching movies and then we'd go to church and put a smile on our face and pretend like, you know, we just pray and read our Bible all the time. And it's just a weird divided self. That's what it felt like. And yeah, totally. It doesn't feel good.
So you get that in other movies too. Like you get it in Women Talking.
Women Talking, great film. Ah, yeah, totally.
And that's gender-based too. And so you see like women like have an identity that they have in the community and then they have to like have secret feelings about things all the time.
Yeah.
So it's like, they're different around each other than they are in the community. Anyway, it's interesting, but they have each other. So that's different than this film. I think this is this deep isolation from even yourself is just, it's kind of a hellish idea.
That's it. Yeah, because this movie is labeled horror, and I don't think it's like overtly scary in the same way of like a It Follows or whatever, but like it, what's scary about it is more of a real terror. It's the terror of what if you live the rest of your life in that bifurcated state and the rest of your life trapped, you know, and that scream at the end, like just haunts me because I'm like, that could have been me. Like, what if I hadn't had to face my own self and come out the other side and be like, no, I don't believe this anymore. This is who I am. What if I still was that person at 29 that, you know, and I just never woke up. And I just was in my 80s and I was still that person sort of like living this very divided life. Like that's how Owen was. And it's terrifying. Genuinely hellish, I think is the right way to say it.
It's also the backdrops are ice cream truck, movie theater, family fun center. They're all, and then everything is adolescent. So it's like basically all this time, like these are all adolescent places that you would go as a teen or a preteen. And they become the backdrop for everything. I don't think the birthday party was unintentional. I think that was another symbol.
Yep.
But I think all these backdrops are like saying, oh, this person isn't being allowed to develop or grow up or become who they are. They're just trapped in this like perpetual adolescent state. And that's horrifying.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
And that final scene, he's just walking around. They're not even paying any attention to him. He's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry about that. I'm sorry. I'm on different medication. I'm sorry. And they're just ignoring him. And it's like, that's what it feels like. That's the life.
So like in the midst of a crowd, you're like, you let that scream out and nobody even is willing to acknowledge that you let that scream out.
Yeah.
And then you go around apologizing and like for your existence. It's it's horrifying.
Yeah.
So I probably, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm, as we talk it through, sometimes it helps me to understand the film. So I appreciate that you're talking it through with me.
Yeah, absolutely. But one thing I want to say as we end here is that even though the film is a bit depressing and, you know, is dark, there's also a hope in it. And one of the most beautiful things that I loved is right before, kind of in the last, one of the last few scenes, Owen is walking down the street and we see in big glowing pavement letters on the road, it says, it's never too late. And I think that is beautiful that they included that, you know, because this could have just been a hopeless sort of macabre movie, but like, and it is, but at the same time, there's a glimmer of hope where it's like, no matter if you are 80, maybe you are 80 and you didn't, you know, have that time where you woke up, it's not too late for any of us to shed those old toxic bifurcated self and actually become who we were supposed to be, have our heart and our mind and our soul line up. I love that. I just love that they included that. And I think that is the final note of hope.
Yeah. I would say this film is a great film if you wanted to like have a dialogue about it.
Yeah.
Like with a group of people, like say you like have a group of people you go to the movies with, maybe you guys watch it individually the week before, kind of like what we do, and then go have like a meal or like maybe not a meal, but like coffee or whatever, get together at a place and then talk this movie out. Like you could use you could even use the outline we've been using here, go through each thing, each element.
And it's PG-13. So it's not like, it's not this hard R thing. You could actually do it with a youth group or something. You really could. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is one of those films that like really is obviously it's, you know, it has this incredible aesthetic to it, but really like it would lends itself to us filling in the dialogue that it lacks. In some ways. Now, yeah. I, yeah. so that we can begin to have some conversations here. Cause like the character's alienation from self and others is just so complete that it really, it does lend itself to, what did you think about that?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, totally. When I showed it to my fam on Sunday night, I mean, my wife and my oldest, I mean, we talked for 25 minutes and, you know, here's my 16-year-old kid just like blown away by this thing and just talking about how it relates to his own life. I think you're absolutely right that it's almost like the moodiness of the film lends itself to, and the abstractness of it lends itself to speaking in different ways to any viewer. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
Definitely.
All right, Tim, what are your final thoughts on I Saw the TV Glow in Your Letter Grade? You need to watch it again is what needs
to happen. Okay, so my that's right. So that actually is my final thought, which is I should try watching this again. And maybe I'll catch some more stuff that I missed this time. So I think that. And then also to take seriously more, to be maybe more open to more trans filmmakers and be aware of some more of those metaphors and stuff, so I can be a better reviewer. I think that would probably be one. And then I give this film a B because it's just the aesthetics were great. I didn't necessarily know if the script was what I would want, but I thought the aesthetics were good. It was very moody and it was so for me like I needed more dialogue. So I give it a B. So I don't think it's a bad film. I think it's a great film. The cinematography is some of the best I've ever seen. So you're going to see the cinematographer in the future. This is my prediction.
I think so too.
So yeah, I thought worth watching, definitely worth the rent, but I didn't like it as much as you did.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it as like, initially I didn't see it as like as meritorious as some other people did.
Well, you all know how I feel about this by now. I think it's the best movie I've seen probably in the last 3 years, I would say. I know. And so, yeah, high praise, but I stand by it. I'd give it an A, and I think this is going to be one of those movies that is going to eventually be an A+ for me. A+, my grading scale, A+, means that it is a classic. It's something I revisit, you know, every year, every other year, and I constantly find new things, and it's just that classic status. So this is going to get there, but I've got to give it time because you can't give an A+ unless you've seen a movie like 20 times, and it really is a classic. So A for now, and I just loved it. So there you go. All right, the movie is I Saw the TV Glow. It's streaming on a TV screen near you, $4. On YouTube, Amazon, just rent it, try it out. Well worth your time. I think we're both agree on that.
Are we going to see this at award season at all, or do you think no? It's just too small.
It's like on most top 10 lists for the year, and I think that is, you know, on professional critics, and then that lends itself to nominations. So I'm hoping.
It'll be interesting.
Yes, and I think it is coming to Max at some point in September if you're a cheapskate and like some
people pay for Max.
People pay for Max. That's true. That's true. That's not free. But there are some people who I was speaking of Kyle Burnt. We talked about him last time, but that guy will not rent a movie. I'm like, it's $3.99. He's like, nope. No, won't do it. It's like, whatever. Anyway.
He's old before his time.
Yes. So rent it. Well worth your time. And if please tell us your thoughts on it. Our email address is podcast@cinemafaith.com. podcast@cinemafaith.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts. As we said, this is a movie that begs for discussion. We would love to hear what you think about it and what touched you personally about it. And we'll talk about it on next podcast. So Tim, we got a lot of good movies coming to the theaters. I think this is already shaping up to be a great year for movies. I just heard about a film that's making waves at the festival circuit. It's called The Brutalist. Get this. It's 4 hours long an intermission.
That is.
Intermission in theaters. And they're saying that it is basically Godfather level, There Will Be Blood, an American epic. And I'm excited about it. So there's a lot of cool movies coming down the pike. And I think next we have Megalopolis as I think going to be our next film, as long as it is in theaters. I believe it comes out this month. So that'll probably be our next movie. That's Francis Ford Coppola's weird sci-fi movie.
Are we giving Frankie another chance here?
We're giving him another chance. Well, he hasn't made a movie in 20 years. What do you mean another chance?
Oh, he hasn't made a movie in 20 years?
No.
Oh, I'm thinking of Scorsese. We always see every Scorsese film. No. Sophia's been making all the movies.
Sophia,
the
No, this is Coppola. Yeah.
So is Megalopolis.
Megalopolis is just supposedly one of the weirdest films you'll ever see. Sci-fi movie starring Adrian Brody. Or not Adrian Brody. What's that guy's name from... Girls and I forget his name. Anyway,
it's from Girls. I don't know. I have no idea.
Doesn't matter. Point is yes, weird sci-fi movie, and I'm excited to see it. So that'll probably be our next film. But
is it based on Metropolis, the original?
I don't know. It's a great question.
All right. Well, we'll find out.
We'll find out. So a lot of good movies coming down the pike, and we're excited to talk about them. Until then, keep the faith, my friends, and we will see you next time.